Dirt and Sprague.
I really do believe they're either going to live up to the hype or they're going to have a very mediocre season.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt.
No, I'm not a bro.
And a little splash of Sprague.
Peekaboo.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland sports leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your days are off to a good start.
What are we doing here?
We're going to talk some NFL here, Brian. That's what we're going to do. I got some NFL in the notes for the next 40 minutes or so. I will throw a little more college football at you in this hour, including the idea of the group of six teams that could make the college football playoff this year. And until yesterday, I was not fully aware that we have a full-on quarterback battle in Corvallis. Three different guys, all still alive with the... I just kind of assumed going into the year with the returning starter that it would be Malik Murphy. So we will revisit that topic a little bit coming up at 8:45. Do not forget, 1 hour from now, it is a Sparta TRT Mail Sack Tuesday.
Mail Sack.
So get your questions in, 503-864-6326. Some really good ones. One conundrum for me that I'm having a very difficult time trying to figure out how I'm going to answer it. But thankfully, I have 1 hour in order to come up with my answer. The Mail Sack at 9 o'clock this morning. So get your questions in again, 503-864-6326. You can tweet them to us or text them to us. I'm going to do a little reversal. I was going to save this for later in my NFL stuff, but I want to get to it first, and then we'll get to the other odds and ends out of the National Football League. There was a ranking that was put out via a basically to judge NFL fandom index. Okay.
Okay.
So here's
for
how they
NFL markets
for NFL markets.
Okay.
Here is how they came up with their how they came up with the metrics: apparel purchases, event attendance,
okay,
streaming numbers, social media following, TV viewership in that market.
Okay.
Radio listening in that market.
Okay.
Betting intent and overall interest level. Now, the last one, I'm like, oh, okay.
How do you judge that?
I don't know. Anyways, that feels like that. The overall interest level is directed from
all of
that. All
the different ways you can consume a team, buying their stuff, watching the games, listening
social
to their
media
games.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they put all this together into a big bucket and said, what are the most avid NFL markets that we have?
By those metrics,
number one is a very easy answer.
The Packers?
It is not. Green Bay is close. They are number three on this list.
Okay, the Bills?
It is the Buffalo Bills.
Okay.
The Buffalo Bills are far and away. So I don't know how they totally computed the score. Their score is 208.
Okay.
To put it into a context, you guess Green Bay, they are third, 172.
I would think
that's the gap.
Based on those metrics, I would think the Cleveland Browns would be high on that list.
The Cleveland Browns do show up inside the top 10. They are number 10 on this list.
Yes.
Despite their ineptitude over the years.
Exactly.
They are a top 10 NFL market based on investment of the fans.
Fan base craves that product.
Yes, they do.
They desperately want it to be better and more relevant, but they can't quit that product.
There were a few surprises in here.
I'm assuming the Dallas Cowboys are up there just by the sheer volume of peoples.
This is one of the interesting ones.
Oh, they're not.
According to these numbers, Dallas, and they combined some of them, like they combined areas. They did like Seattle/Tacoma. They did Dallas/Fort Worth.
Yeah.
They come in 19th in the NFL.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's just people running tired of Jarrah and not winning anything meaningful
Maybe.
In a very long time.
I think so.
Could be possibly the problem there. Some of the ones that surprised me. So Buffalo was number one.
Ooh, the Vikings, Minnesota Vikings.
Another one that shocked me. They showed up at number 11. They were outside of the top 10. And
look, the Vikings love them some Vikings. Skull, the whole bit.
I mean, it's phenomenal, is it not?
Yes. Chiefs. Sorry, the Chiefs should
Chiefs
be.
Chiefs are number two.
Yes.
So you've now guessed the top three.
Who's number one?
You already got it. Buffalo was number one.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so Buffalo 1, Kansas City 2, yeah. Green Bay 3. Those are the most, according to this ranking, the most the
I think
passionate
the Chiefs,
fandom.
Yeah, the Chiefs is obviously their recent level of success boosting that significantly.
Maybe I'm downplaying this too much because I don't respect their owner a ton, so please correct me if I'm in the wrong here.
Oh.
The number four team on this list, ahead of Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, as we mentioned, Minnesota.
Yeah.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, what else you got in Cincinnati?
You got the Reds. You got Skyline Chili. I mean, I know it's not a lot.
Ohio is football country.
I get it. You got Ohio State football. How close is Columbus and Cleveland?
Oh, so Columbus is right in the middle of the state, like dead center middle of the state. Cleveland is up at the Great Lakes at the northern edge, the northeastern edge on Lake Erie.
Okay.
Cincinnati is down on the border of Kentucky.
Kentucky, that's right. Okay. So, again, I'm probably in the wrong there. I get it. Your points are all valid. There's not a lot going on there. It's football country. Yeah. If you were to ask me a more passionate NFL city, would you say Philadelphia or Cincinnati?
I would say Philadelphia.
Right? You say Philadelphia in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Philadelphia now, they are right behind them. They're number five on this list. So yes. Cincinnati came in 4, Philadelphia 5. Only one other major surprise in the top 10. Baltimore was number 7. I get it.
Yeah.
Detroit number 8. You know, all the years of crap, and now you're back, and let's bite your kneecap.
We're Jets fans.
We'll get to that in a moment.
Bless Jets fans.
Yeah.
Like, for the crap they've dealt with for decades, they're still invested.
Our bosses, if he's listening to this segment, he's probably going to come in here and say this list is bogus when I tell you where Jets fans are. New Orleans showed up in the top 10.
Well, based on, I would imagine on Sundays, like that's all you do.
Yeah.
Like you're either listening or watch. If you have to be at work, you are listening. Everybody down there owns Saints gear beyond all belief. The way that they're measuring it, that doesn't surprise me.
Now I'll run through some of the Cleveland, by the way, I gave you that was in the top 10. So that's your top 10: Buffalo, Kansas City, Green Bay, Cincinnati, Philly, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Detroit, New Orleans, Cleveland. That's your top 10.
What do you notice about where that is on a map?
Right. I believe you have the entire AFC North in there. Yeah. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland. The entire AFC North is in there.
Have you crossed the Mississippi yet?
Not a lot.
No, Kansas City.
Yeah,
that's
Kansas
the one.
City, technically. You got
that's
one there.
That's as far west as you've gotten.
Then you go.
I'm surprised Bronco fans aren't on there, though.
Right. Minneapolis, 11. Denver did come in at number 12.
Okay.
And now is when you lose me. This is when whatever metric you put together to compile this list of the most passionate cities, we rip this list up and throw it out the
window. Oh, what do you got? Jacksonville now?
Jacksonville is ahead of
Stop
Seattle.
It. You play a game every year in London.
I love poking fun at 12s because I know a lot of people and I have a lot of family that lives in Seattle.
Yeah,
and
Seahawks should be in the upper half.
Yeah, for my entire life, none of them cared about Seattle. And then they come out of woodworks. Now I get text messages and they have 12 tattoos on their butt cheeks. And it's like, I get it. Front running happens. But none of you gave a rip about this team. When I was a kid, not a single one of you brought it up. Now it's your life and death. That happens. I get it.
Living up there when I was going to school.
I'm not saying there weren't Seahawks fans. I'm not saying
crappy.
That's the case. There were always Seahawks fans. Yes. It's the NFL. I get that. Let's not sit here and act like that fandom is not quadrupled in numbers in the last 20 years.
I had season tickets when they were still in the AFC West.
Yeah.
Don't say anything.
I mean, you're old. It's okay.
What are we doing here?
You did that one to yourself is what you did.
But yeah, the hatred, like the Raider game, was the biggest game of the year.
I get that there's always been NFL fans
there.
They
hate them.
The fandom has exploded. And that happens. When you win, it's happened to Oregon, right? It's natural. It happens when you have success. People jump on board and start rooting. Seattle being behind Jacksonville is criminal.
That's just wrong.
It's dumb. It's ludicrous. And it makes the entire list almost null and void. Chicago is egregiously low on this list. They're number 20. Like, you just cannot tell me people in Houston is a more passionate fandom or fan base than Chicago. I just refuse to believe that. Maybe in a situation like baseball where you have two different teams and it's split up a little bit, everybody there is an Indiana Bears fan, and it's ludicrous that they're number 20 on that list. Houston was 18, Indy 17. As somebody who had a brother who lived in Charlotte, they're way too high on this list. The Panthers are a deal. But also, come on, bigger than the Chicago Bears?
No.
Get out of here. Charlotte was number 16, Nashville number 15. So a lot of the stuff I'm having an issue with, then it gets even funnier. So Boston, the New England market, technically, comes in at 21st on this list. Okay. some of the other ones I agree with, like Vegas, that's a newer market. Atlanta's down there at 24.
Yeah, Atlanta could give or take.
Right.
I mean, they love their Dirty Birds, but they're a little disenchanted with things.
Phoenix at 25.
Ooh, where are the commies at?
The commies are 21 on this list.
How far back does this go?
I think it's just current. I don't know how far. I'm assuming they just are tracking that.
Because I understand there's some residual, like Dan Snyder alienated.
A lot of people.
But now that they're coming back and they're going to redo a stadium in the district and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They should start climbing that list.
Yeah. I've been somebody who's been to Phoenix and around the Cardinals stadium.
They should be dead last.
They don't care. They're not dead last. They are 25th on this list. Tampa, slightly below them. Which I feel like Tampa
loves the Bucs.
Agree with you there. Then it gets funny. The Niners don't even play in San Francisco. Don't worry, I'll get there. The Niners don't even play in San Francisco, so they're also in this weird, like, we play an hour south of the city.
I think the Niners have more fans outside of the Bay Area than they do inside of the Bay Area.
You might actually be right there. That's actually not a bad...
The Chargers are dead last.
San Francisco came in at 27. Miami was 28. The Los Angeles market, so the Rams and the Chargers, came in at number 29. And according to this metric, the lowest fandom index city in the NFL is New York at number 30.
Oh.
Which I just...
Stop it.
Yeah. The Jets are incompetent. I get it. The Giants have won a couple of Super Bowls. They have John Harbaugh as their head coach. Like, the idea...
Is this just percentage? Because there's, 800 billion people in the New York market, and relatively speaking, the percentage is...
Maybe it's a percentage
thing.
I don't know. I have a... Based on that, they did not necessarily say it was just a percentage. I chuckled at that. Like, New York being a lower market than LA.
New York being lower than Duval, stop it.
Jacksonville in the top 13?
You play at least one of your games, if not two per year...
Get out of here.
...in a foreign country.
Right. Some of the other ones I don't have any... Like, San Francisco being that far down, whatever. They don't even play in San Francisco anymore. The San Jose Niners should be that far down. And I think your point on them having more fandom nationally is kind of an interesting and funny point. Because I can't imagine, and I don't live down there, but I'd be curious, like, what percentage of people who would used to go to games at Candlestick still go, like...
Yeah.
That's a long drive now on your Sunday.
It's a long drive.
It changes the entire structure of your fandom and when you go to games and when you don't go to games. Anyways, I saw that. I figured it would rile some people up. New York being last is just laughable. You can tell me they're not the top. That's fine.
No, I would argue Jets fans are more passionate than Giants fans. There are more Giants fans than Jets fans. But to be a truly loyal, dedicated Jets fan...
Through all the years. Not easy to do.
All the firemen Eds out there.
You cannot tell me.
That's a special breed of fandom.
That people in Los Angeles care more about the National Football League than the Rams and Chargers than the Giants and the Jets in New York City.
No.
Like, you just cannot... Both of them are transplant
cities. The Chargers should be last.
Yes, in terms of overall
fandom.
The Chargers
should be last in that list.
It's not a debate at all.
Go back to San Diego. Figure it out.
They should. They have to have paid actors at their games, man.
Exactly.
Remember that Asian lady 2 years ago going crazy? How much we pay her to be there?
I'm going to go treat myself to a birthday gift and get my Chargers jersey. I'm going to have a Chargers jersey this year.
This is the year, baby.
That's right.
So it was a funny metric to look at. No disagreement with the top three, like Buffalo, Kansas City, Green Bay being the top three.
That all makes sense.
And Kansas City's one of those markets too. Like they have loved the Chiefs for a long time.
Certainly
Mahomes.
Stadium atmosphere
exploded. Things,
outstanding. But, yeah. I would recommend if you want to go, see your team somewhere. Find out when they go to Kansas City and have yourself a good time.
Yeah.
And get there, I don't know how much longer before they get their new stadium built, but it's an older stadium, but it's still quite an experience.
Yeah.
I sat in the upper deck when we went, and it was still...
So good seat, good spot. Yeah, I think they went away from where they Geeha Field or whatever they were calling it.
Whatever it was,
it's just back to Arrowhead.
I think their sponsorship ended.
It just came to an end. It might just be Arrowhead for the last however many years of the stadium. It's always been Arrowhead.
What does it take? They got to figure out where they're going to put it, get a financing package together, and then it's probably 2 years to build the thing. So you're looking at least three seasons before
it'll
you
be a while.
Potentially move.
Let's get to let's pivot into a couple of odds and ends out of the National Football League. I'm going to save one coach on his quarterback. We'll get to that in the next segment. Massive year for that guy, and just I'm wondering where people are at on him because his preseason debut certainly didn't go well. I don't know about you. Every time I hear an update on this player, it makes my mind melt. Of how is this possible? Like what? And there was another one yesterday from Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network.
When I was in Santa Clara about a week or so ago, finishing up inside training camp, had the opportunity to watch George Kittle do his workout kind of alongside practice, pre-practice. it was eye-popping. It was really good. It was really fast. It was looking like a player who is basically going full speed. You listen to George Kittle say it. The fact that the numbers are basically what he wants is an unbelievable thing. He is 7 months out from an Achilles injury. Now, generally, players do not get back on the field until 9 months. The season starts about 8 months after him tearing his Achilles. But you listen to George Kittle, listen to 49ers people, at least there is a chance. No one is saying for sure that it's going to happen, and it is an unbelievably long season, especially now with 17 games. They want to make sure that one of their best players on their roster, regardless of position, is in position to contribute in December and January. But the fact that George Kittle has a realistic chance of playing week one, of being out on the field, is incredible. He is not wrong. He's got a shot.
He came out yesterday and emphatically said, I will not start the year on the PUP list, which I think based on everything we're hearing and reading, that will certainly not happen.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to eventually play in week. Just the idea of somebody with modern medicine who, like, it's one thing, I don't know what a sport would be where you're not moving that much. And I don't know what maybe you're a golfer. I don't know. I think you probably need your Achilles for that. The idea of a tight end, that physically demanding, where you're pushing and blocking,
yeah,
and
leverage
is a huge thing. Cutting, move, like it's him doing that in the playoff game. And if he is able to play, what were we, about 3 weeks away from the start of the that game in Australia? Yes. About 3 weeks away.
Yes,
3 weeks
September
from 10th. Thursday, right? It'll be.
Yeah.
I don't know. No injury will ever seem as a big deal for me anymore.
The advancement of modern medicine,
it's wild,
is amazing,
wild. That's like, it's one thing for Daniel Jones. He went down in, what, I want to say week 10 for the Colts?
Yeah, middle of the season.
Middle of the season. He's hoping that he can be ready and maybe potentially go. And we'll see on that if he ends up being their day one starter. They certainly aren't in a good spot if it's Anthony Richardson. But that's neither here nor there. That I can wrap my head a little bit more around. I remember watching that playoff game, and when Kittle went down, it was such a double whammy of like, oh, God, the Niners are getting destroyed. Because I think he got hurt in the Seattle game, or was it a Philly game? I can't remember. But either way.
Philly.
Was it the Philly? Maybe it was the first playoff game. Either way, you're like, okay, the playoff run's going to come to an end, but now, damn it, now you're going to be without George Kittle for how much in next year? Because your mind just kind of goes to the Achilles, and this is what we obviously used to do with, Tommy John in baseball or ACLs, and you'd think, oh my God, that's going to be such a long break.
Okay, you've got at least a year.
Right, to come back and be able.
And hopefully it heals right.
Him playing in week one, if I turn that TV on and I'm watching that game, because I'm going to be glued to it, Rams and Niners will be a great matchup and a couple of divisional rivals, it's going to melt my brain. If George Kittle plays in week one, it will melt my brain, and I'm just going to leave that there because that's wild stuff. Couple of thoughts here on the fan text line. We have a who dat chiming in. I love it. We got the fan base is calling them.
Of course.
We got to do it. Dirt as a who dat here in town. Not a native of New Orleans, I can say that they are crazed for the Saints and honestly football in general. Remember, it is SEC country. They live and die for football.
Yep.
Mondays after a loss is always kind of grim and depressing in New Orleans. Who dat? Maybe I'm too disrespectful to New Orleans there. Another one, Cincinnati's proud of Skyline Chili, and it is disgusting. That it is. It is disgusting. But Cincinnati, maybe again, and somebody texted in and said, I've been to a tailgate at Cincinnati. They know how to party and have a good time. Now, I never question their tailgating ability. And again, maybe I'm conflating too much of overall success and, seeing teams having these, I don't know, these go on these runs.
Versus measuring devotion
inside the market.
Impact. Yeah.
So I certainly acknowledge I could be wrong there. Another one, my girlfriend and I were just talking about the Saints. She's from Alabama. They love the Saints and said the same, rabid fans down there. So That is one of the unique things, I guess, maybe about pockets.
Yeah, and
in the
Saints
South
are one of those areas where their region expands quite a bit.
Yes.
Because you got to go all the way to Dallas to the west and all the way to
Atlanta,
Charlotte
probably,
or Atlanta in the east.
So you got a little pocket there where you can kind of cultivate some good fans. Yeah. And obviously the impact after Katrina and what that meant for the city. Like, I didn't mean to dismiss New Orleans as a football city. I just, when you look at the rankings and it's like, they're that high. That was just, some of those were surprising to me, but fun nonetheless of where certain markets came in. I think we can all agree, everybody in unison, Jacksonville, not a top 13 market.
No.
Get the hell out of here. What are your expectations for this quarterback? Because in the National Football League, the clock is already ticking. We'll hear from his head coach and talk a little bit about him. Is he more this player or that player? We'll talk about that a little more in the NFL next, 105.1 FM The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Good fans here, bad fans there. Fun debate, man. Fun debate. Mail sack coming up at the top of the hour. 503-864-6326. Fire them in. We'll answer them coming up at 9 o'clock. this morning. To the point on Jacksonville, too, there was a quote, and there's one going viral of Roger Goodell. And this, like, nothing will ever burst the NFL bubble, probably. It's such a mega institution in this country that I don't ever see any sort of contraction in the interest or viewership and all of that. One of the things that just would, if you want to be bothered this morning, was Roger Goodell coming out and saying, we will have at some point an international National Football League team. And I don't get it. I don't understand when there's so many markets in this country that are interested in it. And their argument would be, we got to grow on a more international scale to get more fans involved in all that. Like, we already do the international games. The idea of a team being in London in the National Football League or Mexico City, if you want to do something in, even in this hemisphere, it would be at least a little bit more understandable, but I'm out on that idea. There's so many good markets that would kill for it. Like, if you're going to move a team or expand, you go to more American cities before you go internationally. And that stuff drives me nuts from the NFL. Absolutely bothers me. Any hoosies, let's get to a massive year for a quarterback and, to be honest, a head coach, because he's getting a second opportunity. Now, I never want to take too much out of preseason football because it means something, but it also doesn't mean that much, if that makes any sense. But when you struggle and the majority of the guys on the other sideline are guys that are not necessarily going to be starters or high-level players for that team, and you're not hitting it at a high clip, that leaves me a little concerned about where you're at. Now, it's early. You got two more preseason games to go. We talked about this on Friday because one of the games on the preseason slate last Thursday was involving the most untalked about number one pick in the history of the National Football League, Cam Ward. Cam Ward happened to be in the same draft as Shedeur Sanders, and all anybody talked about in the entire draft was Shedeur Sanders, and he didn't end up going until, what, the fifth or sixth round of Cleveland, whatever it was. Cam Ward was the number one overall pick. Cam Ward was the Heisman Trophy winner. He goes to Tennessee. It was a disaster in year one. But I think with rookie quarterbacks, there is a one-year grace period of like, yeah, the coaching situation wasn't great. Your team sucked. You had nobody to throw the ball to. I don't blame you. You're supposed to be bad. If you're good, cherry on top. But I'm not putting any sort of expectations on you. You know what kicks in year two? Expectations. Here is from the Rich Eisen Show, Robert Saleh was on. Talk about a guy, again, who's facing some pressure, a retread head coach. You don't see that often with guys who kind of fail and flop the first time around getting that another coaching job that quickly. He did in Tennessee, and here is Saleh talking about Cam Ward and Brian Daboll and their relationship early on in camp.
The biggest thing is just the constant communication. You know, they're constantly communicating. They're constantly talking about the different things that are happening, not only in practice, but not only in the game, but in practice from drill to drill to play, and you know, so as long as the dialogue is strong and as long as there's open communication and honest communication, I think you're always going to find growth. And Cam, one thing about Daboll, he's not going to sugarcoat anything. He's going to tell you exactly where you are and what you need to get done and how you need to do it. And to Cam's credit, he's taking all the coaching, wants all the coaching, and he's attacking it with every fiber in his body.
So that is him talking about his first-year quarterback, but the second-year quarterback in Tennessee, Cam Ward. And this is where it gets interesting to me for a couple of reasons. One is that you don't really have the built-in coaching excuse narrative for him anymore. Like, say what you want about Brian Daboll and it not working in New York, and it certainly didn't. Nobody really questions his offensive chops, right?
No.
As like a play caller.
No.
Some guys just maybe it's just too big of a mountain to climb to be a head coach, or the situation wasn't right, whatever. But I don't think anybody's questioning him.
Modern head coaching
offensive expertise
is so different from where it was.
A huge part of being successful in the NFL as a head coach is having a quarterback.
Yeah.
And he had Daniel Jones for a year. They gave Vanilla Vic the extension. They went to the playoffs, won the game against Minnesota, and then it just never was quite the same. And Daniel Jones wasn't quite it. And so that is a big part of this puzzle. And Robert Saleh knows that because he went to New York. They brought in Aaron Rodgers, and he popped his Achilles two plays in, and he was fired 2 years later because that's just the way that it works. You have a head coach who I do think from a defensive standpoint is very respected as a leader of men and as a defensive mind. And so the coaching thing is kind of out of the window now. You drafted a wide receiver early in the draft. Let's build some weapons. Let's get you some pieces.
And you still have another one there.
Yes, those boxes have now been checked. And so there's this idea of this is how quickly it ramps up in the NFL.
Yeah.
And when I look at Cam Ward, I wasn't quite sure how to feel about him coming out of college. He was a guy who built a lot of what he did doing things in college that I didn't know how they would translate to the NFL, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, Caleb Williams was this for me as well. he was such a extending the play, unscripted, backyard football, I'm going to make you miss and throw a ball that you're like, oh my God, how did you do that? But when I need you to play within the structure of the offense, can you? Can you release the ball on time? Can you throw, layered throws with timing? Can it come out? Can you have good rhythm? All of those things, I think Caleb Williams, maybe not all of them, but he did answer a lot of those questions last year, and he still had the component of making the special play, a la the Rams game on fourth down. I still don't know how they scored that touchdown in the playoffs before ultimately losing the game, right? So he had that blend of, I can extend and make a special play mixed with, now I've shown with a competent offensive mind in Ben Johnson, I can play with timing and I can play with rhythm because that's the way Ben Johnson's offense works. I had those same questions about Cam Ward coming out of college. He certainly did not answer them in year one. Now, again, to be fair, I'm not expecting him to. They sucked butt last year, and it would have taken a modern miracle for a quarterback to have a good year with that coach combination of roster. His numbers on the season, below 60% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Not very good. If he comes out and those numbers don't take a jump, now I don't know what number of jump we're looking for, that would lead me to believe that Tennessee has a pretty bad year this year, right? Like if he's not that significantly improved, I would look at Tennessee and say, okay, you're probably winning 4, 5, 6 games maybe at most if you're not getting good quarterback play. And guess what Tennessee's going to do next year?
Yeah.
That's how quickly this goes. And it becomes a very interesting storyline for me. I love their new uniforms. I love the rebrand. I'm certainly rooting for Cam Ward. Like, his story of going from an unranked recruit, a zero-star guy to Incarnate Word, then to Washington State, having these moments and flashpoints at Washington State, going to Miami and winning the Heisman Trophy and becoming the number one overall pick, is a remarkable sports story. One of the craziest we've ever seen in modern football, right? From literally nothing to the number one overall pick in Heisman. So I'm certainly rooting for him. But this is where the pressure cooker kicks in, man. And if he does not show that he has the ability to play with rhythm and to play with timing and to get rid of the ball when he needs to and to throw with anticipation, all the little things that you're looking for that he can then mix with his ability to extend plays, Tennessee's going to move on from him. Robert Saleh's not going to kick this around for 3 years. He's got this might be his last shot as a head coach in the NFL. This is it. If he doesn't think he got it, they're going to tell ownership to move on. Not to mention, what is the Titans ownership group been known for the last handful of years? Flying off the cuff, firing coaches, firing GMs. Well, Vrabel's gone.
Well, GM, they got another family full of infighting because the kids took chaos. It over from, the parent.
If you don't have stable, experienced, and calm leadership in the ownership room, you know what the Titans are going to do next year? Draft a quarterback, because that's how this stuff goes. And so I'm certainly rooting for him. I want him to be successful. I guess my question on him, when you look at him, do we see more Caleb Williams, whose numbers as a rookie were better, but again showed a lot of the warts that he showed in college of holding onto the ball too long, taking sacks, like his turnovers weren't necessarily that alarming, but there were some things that you're like, okay, maybe we can work on this a little bit, and he certainly had a much better year too. Do you see more Caleb Williams or do you see Bryce Young? Now, I know that Bryce Young went to the playoffs, but I don't think anybody's putting Bryce Young into a category.
I see more Caleb Williams.
You see with Cam Ward?
I think the potential's there. It is, can Brian Daboll find a way to relate to Cam Ward so he can see the vision?
Can you get through to him?
Yeah.
It's a challenge. And you got a weapon to throw to now, too.
Because you have Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, Calvin Ridley are, if healthy, your starting three wide receivers.
Right.
That should be plenty of ammunition. Somebody should be open, assuming your offensive line gives you 2.5 seconds.
You should have a chance.
3 seconds.
You should have a chance out there.
You should be able to find somebody open
at
that point.
They went and addressed a major need for him, and they got better as a coaching staff around him. And so some of those kind of things that you can lean on early in your career let's be fair to this guy, that guy. If he puts up good numbers and they don't win, that's fine. I'm not saying the expectation for Tennessee this year is to compete.
There's a lot of pressure on Tony Pollard to be what he was when he was with Dallas. And,
that's got to be
they don't have much running back pass there.
No, you got to be around 64% completion percentage. I need to see an increase there.
Yeah.
I want to be around 25 touchdown passes somewhere in that mix. And not have an alarming jump in interceptions. If you're somewhere in the, you know, 3,500 or north yards, north of 64% completion percentage, 24, 25 touchdowns.
Got to knock the turnovers down.
Somewhere in there for the, you know, seven picks.
That's just it. Even if you sustain drives, because you know Robert Saleh, and he's going to get that defense organized.
Yes.
And your schedule ramps up quickly. Now, you better beat the Jets at home week one.
That you can't lose that game.
Because then you got Eagles at Giants at Ravens, Texans at Colts, Browns, Bengals. Yeah. So, but Eagles, Giants, Ravens, Texans, Colts, Browns, dealing with some...
None of those are gimme. Even the Jets aren't a gimme for Tennessee right now.
No, because the Jets can play defense.
Yeah, until
we don't
I see
know if they can score, but they can like. Play defense.
Yeah, and it was, you know, watching a good chunk of that preseason game, number one. Again, it is preseason, so, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. But as somebody who watched a good chunk of that game.
Yeah, there's going to be some growing pains, I think. There's always a struggle like that where Cam Ward felt so much of it was on him in the moment to make something happen.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, Daboll's like, no, we need to make it happen pre-snap. I need you to be able to read the defense, look at our scheme, our personnel, and know where you should be going before the snap. And that transition for some guys is a challenge.
Yes. He had 9 games last year under 200 passing yards. Again, it's a rookie. He's going to go through your struggles.
He's going to go through
that. It's going to be tough.
The O-line at times was not
good.
Not great.
Not good at all. They only won 2 games on the season, right? So it was a disastrous year for Tennessee. I grant you that. But yeah, this is how quickly things turn in the NFL. And so I was noodling on that. I was watching that interview yesterday from Rich Eisen with Saleh and thought that, you know, It looked rough. Preseason game number one against San Francisco. He was 5 of 12 for like 40 yards. He extended a play and took a horrible sack down around his own end zone. Tried to get rid of the ball late. I think they called grounding or said he was down. Like, it just, some of those little warts that show up, you got to play with time. You got to play with rhythm in the NFL. You're not a better athlete than defensive linemen in the National Football League. You might be able to dance around occasionally here or there and extend a play. But on a regular basis,
you're not going to make a living out of that,
dude. You're not playing Texas State this weekend, my man. That's the New York Giants on the other side.
Don't shade at the Bobcats. That's Pac-12 Texas State.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the Group of Six, because there's a quote from Connolly. Who is the team, and who are the teams who have a chance to crash the party? Also, a 3-man race for the starting quarterback for this team. We'll dive into that little college football, then we'll get to the mail sack at the top of the hour. Back after this on the Fam. All right, a couple of notes, and we'll get to our audio. Somebody texting in, fan text line 503-864-6326, which, by the way, last call for mail sack questions. We'll get to those coming up here in the next segment.
Mail sack!
It is a Sparta TRT mail sack day, so get them in, and it's a good-looking sack so far. We will get to those 14 minutes from now. This text came in, even with a good vet quarterback, they would have struggled with the Titans last year. No protection, no solid run game, weapons that can create space, get open, etc. He was in a tough situation. If Cam was playing for the Rams, he would have looked very different last year. I don't disagree with any of that. I certainly understand the point. The argument that I'm simply making is this is the way the NFL moves, man. Like, whether it's fair or not, whether you think it's Cam Ward or not, whether you think there's a nether version of Cam Ward that is a Sam Darnold down the line, that certainly can all be true. If he struggles and they struggle and you have a top 5 pick in the draft next year, they're taking a quarterback, man. Yeah. It's going to happen. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. And I think the point that I'm trying to make, too, is that a lot of the – again, I'm not asking him to win a playoff game. I'm not asking him to be the MVP. A lot of the stuff that was a concern last year, I think they have gotten better at. They've added a weapon.
Yes.
I think their offensive line, I don't know, it's not going to be leaps and bounds better than it was last year, but should improve. I think you've added a competent coaching staff and guys who know what they're doing on each respective side of the ball.
Can the new coaching staff overcome some of the instincts and habits that Cam Ward has lived by?
That's the biggest struggle.
From his collegiate career. Because they took him, doing it that way got him, as you said,
to the number
from
one pick,
Incarnate Word to being the number one pick.
Right.
That's the biggest thing is Brian Daboll's coming in and he's got to break him of some of his instincts and habits into trust, you know, trust the guys around him, trust the coaching staff, trust the game plan, trust the script. And he hasn't necessarily... That hasn't been
not
how
every,
he's been successful in his career.
That's always the concern taking guys like that. It's a weird balance when you're evaluating quarterbacks where there's a lot of guys who, Like, J.J. McCarthy, to me, is the opposite of this. He was a guy who was completely in the confines of the Michigan offense.
Right.
And running the football and play slants, and I'd take it 60 yards, and here's another handoff, and here's another handoff. Like, there was, and I'm not saying he never did anything off script.
And the minute something or a defense upset that,
right.
And he's like,
I don't know what to do, right? And so there's a balance of, you don't want the guy who's only within the structure of the offense, but also the guy who mainly thrives outside of the structure of the offense. Is a little like, can you take that and turn it into a normal quarterback with the ability to splice that on top? And that's, I think Caleb Williams has shown that. Year one, he had some ups and downs. I know his completion percentage actually went down from year one to year two, which is kind of one of those weird oddities. He has some accuracy issues at times. That's probably his biggest bugaboo right now. But he has shown the ability to play within the structure and the confines of the offense and then mix in the flair of a big play here or there. I'm rooting for Cam Ward. I hope he is successful. They've gotten him a receiver. They got him better coaches. You got to go play better football this year. It did not certainly look good. The Niners played essentially no starters on defense, and they had a really hard time moving the football in that game. Preseason, grain of salt, just something I'm monitoring because if Tennessee struggles, I would not be surprised in the least if they are to move on. The group of six pathway to the college football playoff is an interesting question to me. Oregon might be opening their season with the representative. It might be Boise State again. Last year we got two. For the ridiculous reason of the way we wrote the rules, it was Tulane and James Madison both made the college football playoff. That will never happen again. Here is our friend Bill Connolly. As we look through the group of six teams and the list that might be contending for a college football playoff spot.
I do think the list starts with Boise State again. They had a confusing season last year. They just kind of, they looked like they were supposed to half the time and then just, you know, no-showed a few times along the way as well. But I do think they have the most talent by far, especially on the defensive side of the ball, experience on offense. I think the list starts with them, but it does get pretty interesting after that. I think UNLV, you know, giving Jackson Arnold his third chance, I think if Jackson Arnold's going to succeed anywhere, it's in a Dan Mullen offense, and that could be a really, really good match, and they could have easily have 9-10 win potential. And then after that, I don't know. I think there are a lot of teams in the American that have really, really high upside, but just experienced so much turnover last season or after last season, losing the coach, losing 20 starters or whatever. Memphis, for example, has a ton of upside, but nobody knows each other yet, and it's going to take a little while. So I'd say I feel most confident in the upside of those three, but I think definitely Boise at the top.
Yeah, Boise is the head and shoulders favorite to be the group of six representative. It would certainly be a great start for the Pac-12 if they are that team. If they're feisty with Oregon in week one, that'll be essentially a win for them, right? If they're competitive in that game, we used that 2 years ago. They damn near pulled off the upset, and according to most, that was just kind of like a win for Boise State because they
pretty much
barely beat or almost beat Oregon at Autzen Stadium.
Yeah,
and so
now if they get rolled,
it's going to hurt the resume a little bit.
It'll kill them.
Right. You do have a lot of chances for those teams at that level to play. Boise's just one of them. There's a lot of group of six games against some of the heavy hitters atop the sport. Fresno State plays USC right out of the gate, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to get your chances at it.
Well, let me go find that.
Yeah, go. I mean, there's a decent number of them. And I don't remember it off the top of my head. To his point on the American, this is just the difficult lot in life that
Hawaii is at Stanford week zero. And there are
that's one of the week zero games, yeah.
Yeah. So
that's actually a close point spread, too, by the way.
4 o'clock on the ACC network. And that's one where some people think Hawaii now they're in the Mountain West.
Yes. If they pull off that upset in week one, it's not even that big of an upset. I want to say Stanford's 5.5.
You mentioned both Memphis and UNLV. They face each other week zero, 7 o'clock on Fox.
See? I'm excited, but that's a game that intrigues me a little bit just for that argument.
And that's a good game for week zero because that game on a full week
gets lost. Right, but in week zero it means something.
But these are two teams that could be the group of six representative. There you go.
Yeah. There was an article that came out a few weeks back, and I meant to bring it up on the show, and I just kind of spaced on it. But it was basically the percentage of all Americans and returning stat leaders in the group of six category across college football, it is insane the percentage of those guys who moved on to greener pastures after being statistical leaders. Now, it doesn't mean you can't cultivate the next crop of guys, right? The next group of guys comes about and they end up having good years, and then the cycle will continue itself endlessly on repeat unless we get some sort of restriction on how often you can transfer and all of that. I certainly admire Dan Mullen and what he's built 1 year into UNLV. I like his ability to attract blue chip type players who didn't quite pan out. You know, that was him last year. Calandria ended up being their primary quarterback. He has now moved on again to get back to the power level. He's going to be the starter at Nebraska this year. He had come from Virginia initially. You heard Connolly mention there Jackson Arnold was the guy. It's funny how he connects locally. His stardom as a recruit was one of the reasons that Dylan Gabriel left Oklahoma in the transfer portal. Because Jackson Arnold, I believe, was the number one or one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school. They sat him for a year, redshirted him. That was Gabriel's year, and it was like, all right, we're handing the kid the reins. And it ended terribly. He went to Auburn. It was a bad thing. Hugh Freeze got fired. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up thriving this season at UNLV. So just a couple of – none of them are ranked in the top 25. Boise State, if you look at like Connolly's model or Josh Pate's model, or the, you know, when you just have these predictive looks at the returning production, all the things that go into it, yeah. It is Boise State as the top group of six yep. team, and then a massive gap until you start getting to the next bunch of teams.
The group of six teams that received any votes in the first AP poll, yeah. Boise State had the most, mm-hmm. then it was Navy.
Yeah.
UNLV, New Mexico, James Madison, Jason Memphis, Eck, yeah. Liberty, Western Michigan, and Tulane.
Somebody
those were the only other schools that even got a vote.
Western Michigan showed up in the top 25.
Western Michigan
huh?
got one, Tulane got one, Liberty got one, Memphis two, James Madison three, New Mexico four.
Okay, a lot of those make sense. I don't know much about what, I'm just going to be honest with you. I've not
Navy
done my...
Navy got 10. Boise State had 43.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, just to show you the gap there, right? Like, oh, yeah. Boise State is
Boise,
there.
Boise State was at the end gap. Of the top 25 on multiple ballots.
They're just on the outside looking at it. So it'd be a great look. I don't know what, you know, I didn't get to my Oregon State thing there, so I might hold that for tomorrow. I don't know what, if you're like the Pac-12 pride thing is a thing for Beaver fans. I don't know if that exists. I don't pretend to know what's going on inside your head as a sports fan.
I think
it'd be beneficial.
I don't
Boise
know
State
if you're rooting for it, but I think you want to see as, you know,
year if, one is a league that you send the rep to the playoff. It'd be a nice
yes,
feather
how,
in the cap.
How does the path look if Boise State gets there? What do they have to do?
Yeah. That'll
do
be
they
your
have
blueprint.
To go 11-1 and give Oregon, you know.
You just got to be the highest ranked team at the end of the year. You don't even need to win a conference championship anymore.
Well,
the
I know that.
Six.
But is it. Do you have to go 11-1 and your yeah. only loss is to potentially a national championship contender
right. in close
and not get
fashion.
Blown out yeah. completely? Or are they allowed another slip up? Are they 10-2 or are they 10-3 winning the conference title game? Well, I guess they won't have one, but they play the extra. I don't know how it works.
It's still convoluted. Yeah.
Yeah.
None of us have figured that out yet.
You know, are you allowed? Is there some respect to the depth of your conference? Or
right.
do you have to run the table?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out this year. Boise is the favorite. They're going to be in Eugene week one, a couple of Saturdays from now. One last bit of Group of Six news, by the way, came out late yesterday. I want to say our Daniel Libet, who works for Sportico, we've had him on before. The Mountain West and the Pac-12 is officially settled. That whole lawsuit thing, $49 million from the five schools leaving for the Pac-12. That's about half of what the Mountain West originally wanted. So Libet had that report yesterday that is all now water under the bridge. I would still be bummed that UNLV didn't make the move. UNLV and the Pac-12 would be great. It's a desirable market to go visit and all that, and I'm bummed that they're still in the Mountain West. Lots to get to in the final hour. We will start, though.
Mail sack.
It is a mail sack Sparta TRT Tuesday. Get your questions in. Last call for them, 503-864-6326. Kicks out the final hour next on The Fan.